The longest state budget standoff since the Great Depression ended yesterday. Democratic Speaker of the House Michael Madigan managed just enough votes to override the governor's vetoes.
Our budget agreement was made possible by legislators on both sides of the aisle who looked beyond partisan differences and put the best interest of our state and its residents first.
It was a tough vote for Republicans like Steve Anderson, who supported the budget but were mostly against the tax increase.
Our state employees are going to get laid off. We're going to have disaccreditation of our universities. Our bonds are going to default. We are going into free fall if we don't do this.
Now, as Illinois residents and lawmakers look ahead, it's State Comptroller Susana Mendoza's job to pay the bills.
State vendors will still have to wait longer than they'd like to be caught up on payments. But there is finally a path forward.
What's next for Illinois? That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. We speak with lawmakers and you. Stay tuned. Yes, there's a state budget after 736 days, but while there's relief from people in Illinois, there's little, if any, celebrating.
Our state employees are going to get laid off. We're going to have disaccreditation of our universities. Our bonds are going to default. We are going into free fall if we don't do this.
I had presidents of universities calling me. I had the CEOs of hospitals calling me. I had school superintendents calling me saying, we're losing our jobs, we're closing our doors.
We've heard about the different responsibilities and the obligations of the state. Yes, I understand that. But it should not always be predicated upon more taxpayer sacrifice.
Our budget agreement was made possible by legislators on both sides of the aisle who look beyond partisan differences and put the best interest of our state and its residents first.
Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Those were the voices of Representative Steve Anderson, Representative Sue Scherer, House Republican Leader Jim Durkin, and Democratic Speaker of the House Michael Madigan speaking yesterday before and immediately following the vote that finally gives Illinois a budget. It's also a rebuke to Governor Bruce Rauner and his demands for pro-business economic overhauls. The House and Senate narrowly voted to override the governor's vetoes of the $36 billion spending bill and nearly $5 billion tax hike. One more number for you. We've still got a $15 billion pile of overdue bills. Getting there was dramatic right up until the final moments. Lawmakers faced threats and harassment before the vote. The state capitol was on lockdown for around 2 hours just when the vote was scheduled. Crews in hazmat gear investigating a white powder that was thrown inside the state house, including into the governor's office. One woman was taken into custody, even though the threat was determined to be just that, a threat. Yesterday was a key moment for Illinois, no matter your opinion of the outcome. Today, we're getting reaction from lawmakers who voted yesterday, from some of the people most affected by the budget standoff, and we'll hear from former Republican Governor Jim Edgar about where we go from here. We've also been asking for your reaction the past 24 hours on social media. Megan from Oak Park says, I'm grateful for the legislators brave enough to start fixing the problem. I love Illinois. We're going to start with the woman who's faced with paying all of the state bills, Comptroller Susana Mendoza. Comptroller, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nyla.
Let's start with what do you do now? Now you finally have a budget. How do you start figuring out what needs to be paid?
Yes. Well, after taking a breath of relief, our job only gets even more complicated here in the Office of the Comptroller. It's just going to be a shift. You know, I think for some time our office had turned into the state's main trauma center. And we were dealing with life and death decisions almost on a daily basis. It was just not, it was a terrible situation. But this budget will at least put a cap on spending, which was not happening over the last 2 years. And it will allow us to go from being the main trauma center to more of a recovery room with a trauma unit that's still going to be dedicated to paying back that Rauner backlog of $15 billion. It's a tough job, but we are ready. We are going to take that baton and run with it and do the best that we can to primarily attack the Rauner backlog, because that $15 billion is just, it's insane. It's a 200% increase from what it was when he took office. If we ignore it, it doesn't go away. It just keeps, collecting late payment interest penalties and We're going to do our best to try to tackle that as quickly as possible. It's going to take years.
Sure, not that it's going to go away. There's been court cases, and I want to ask last Friday with the federal judge ordering the state to do more to pay down the backlog specifically of medical bills for services for Medicaid patients. Is that still the plan with the new budget in place? How do you prioritize, for example, that court order versus everything else now?
Yeah, so that first of all, is a federal court order, so it has to automatically be prioritized. It's not up for discussion. We were trying to figure out what the number was that the judge was going to tell us we were going to have to make as a core payment, and it ended up being $586 million, which is a huge amount of money on a monthly basis. But they are owed around $3 billion, and they deserve to be paid for the services that they've rendered, treating people with, you know, severe illnesses, and it's a Medicaid population, so it's a vulnerable group of folks. We will prioritize that, as the court has directed us to do that, and we're going to have to continue to manage a budget in a way that allows us to give people some immediate relief, although we have to temper expectations. This is not like the state of Illinois is now flush with cash. We're far from that.
Well, and I think,
we're just trying to recover from 2 years of having no budget, which is difficult to recover from.
And I think you were trying to do that yesterday. You've been doing these series of YouTube videos, talking to you with lots of charts to kind of explain to people where we're at. You said something yesterday in the video that you released. We will tweet out that video, by the way, for people who haven't seen it. You said you would tackle the backlog with both transparency and in a manner that would assure the financial markets. How do you intend to do that?
Well, number one, we're going to start by paying off we're going to leverage the federal dollars that we can to help make an actual dent in that backlog. That was one of the concerns. You know, you heard Moody's yesterday talk about the fact that we have this outstanding $15 billion, that's an issue. Of course it's an issue. I mean, it was $5 billion 2 years ago. Now it's $15. That's a 200% increase. How we try to address that with limited options is going to be, you know, an art of skill. But we're going to do our best. Now, there is, as you know, part of this budget plan that passed incorporates this increase in revenue, but that only raises about $5 billion. The state of Illinois had been operating at about a $7 billion deficit spending, which is just insane. But $3 billion worth of cuts, $5 billion worth of revenue will at least level that out. And then if we're lucky, we may be able to borrow about $3 billion, even though we have the authority to borrow around $6 billion, but we don't even have the revenue available to actually get those loans. So we're not sure that we can get the full six. If we're lucky, we can get three, and that $3 billion, we would try to do our best in tackling those bills that are part of that backlog that are earning 12% interest penalties because we haven't paid them on time. So we will do our best to make sure that the markets know that we will be meeting our obligations on debt service, we'll be meeting fully our obligations on pensions that they were also concerned about, and we're going to do the best that we can in the Office of the Comptroller to tackle that $15 billion runner backlog, and we'll get there. It's just not going to happen overnight. I think the governor will probably be gone, and we'll be paying for that for years before we're done paying it completely down.
You know, yesterday you said there was a glimmer of hope for bipartisanship, right? That's the 10 Republicans who joined to override the governor's veto, 15, if you count the initial votes for the budget. You said that was a glimmer of hope for bipartisanship and for working together. I wonder how you plan to rebuild trust with the governor as a Democrat holding this office, especially now that members of his own party have voted against him.
I think the issue is rebuilding trust amongst each other. I don't know that it's possible to rebuild trust with Governor Rauner because he's shown no desire to do that. But what we saw yesterday was finally 10 Republican legislators who said, enough is enough. We are on the brink of junk bond status. Our universities are being decimated. We're bleeding jobs and we're bleeding constituents out to other states. And it's not because of term limits. It's because we don't have a budget in place and our social service network has crumbled. Our universities are going under. Five of them are in junk bond status. I mean, at some point, the reason why these folks ran for public office overcame any loyalty to the governor. And this was not about party. It wasn't about, breaking off to become a Democrat. No, they just cared more about their state. So now is that that's a great moment for us as Democrats and Republicans to understand that there's a lot more that we share together than we have that separates us. And we all want to help the people of this state. So if the governor doesn't want to do that, that's fine. He can get out of the way. But these Republicans and these Democrats can actually come together and pass legislation. You saw they just overrode a governor's veto yesterday. This is possible. If the governor doesn't want to be a part of the solution, the legislators, Democrats and Republicans, can begin to build trust amongst each other and realize that working together, we can get a whole heck of a lot more done than continuing to just fight these partisan battles.
That's Comptroller Susana Mendoza joining us. Thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
We have a budget, but that doesn't mean we've even begun to solve the problems of funding K through 12 schools. This new budget says no money can be spent on schools without an evidence-based funding model. Jennifer Garrison is a superintendent of Sand Oval Community Unit 501. That's about an hour east of St. Louis. Superintendent, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Yes, thank you for having me.
You know, Superintendent, there are a lot of people celebrating today that we have a budget. How do you feel as a school superintendent?
We are still taking the moment to celebrate that we finally have a comprehensive budget that will fund our schools, our human services, and our universities. But as you mentioned, for K-12, this is not the end of the road for us yet. We still need the funding formula or the funding mechanism to flow the money appropriated now to K-12. And we do have a bill, Senate Bill 1, that passed both chambers May 31st and is awaiting the governor's signature. So we're hoping that the governor will sign Senate Bill 1 so we have our new evidence-based model ready to go for when payments should be distributed the beginning of August. So that's our next step.
Yeah, Superintendent, regardless of whether or not the governor, whether he signs it or he vetoes it, I just wonder what's the time frame for you in terms of how crucial do you need movement on this for you for opening in the fall for your district?
Really, the Illinois State Board of Education, we've been told needs to have the funding formula in place by August 2nd because we usually get our first state payment, general state aid, on around August 10th. So that's our timeline. So we're looking at the next few weeks. We really need to get this done.
And are you confident that legislators will be able to do that?
I think what we've seen the last few weeks, and especially yesterday with the bipartisan override, that does give us some hope. And the reality is, without the bipartisan effort moving forward, K-12 schools are still in the same situation without money. So as you've heard our stories throughout the last few months, that means some of us will be not able to open our doors or even closing in the first semester or second semester. But again, trying to keep hope alive and be thankful that we did see the bipartisanship yesterday.
Mm-hmm. How about for you guys, for Community Unit 501? Where are you guys financially?
We have a special board meeting on Monday. We're estimating around Halloween is what I have projected, but that depends on when our local taxpayer dollars would come in. We are primarily funded by the state, so our property taxes only would allow us to stay open a few more months.
Yeah, it sounds like a very stressful situation for you, and I know repeated across the state with lots of K through 12 superintendents. I know you're busy right now, even though this is summer, because of all of this that you're dealing with. So thanks for joining us. Jennifer Garrison is a superintendent with Sand Oval Community Unit 501. Superintendent, thanks for coming back on the 21st to chat with us.
Yes, thanks once again for having me. Appreciate it.
We've been asking you how you feel about the fact that there's a budget. Dave says people with no pension, no benefits, and horrible insurance have taxes raised. to pay for all of those things for government employees. Celebrate. I'm assuming that's a sarcastic celebrate in that tweet from Dave. We've got other folks. Jake from Chicago says the fact that the governor was overridden shows the extent to which he was unwilling to compromise. He is no moderate, as he claimed. Keep the tweets coming to 21STShow. We've actually compiled all of them, and we'll tweet out a link to all of that reaction from everyone as well. Let's hear from folks that we talked to in Champaign-Urbana yesterday evening.
It's pathetic to me that we have had this issue for this long and it's just now getting passed.
It's about time. If I'd done that for a job for that long, and I'm talking about everybody, I would have had to fire myself.
I'm not opposed to tax hikes as long as there's some sort of checks and balance to make sure that there's no mismanagement of the extra money. I'm going to have to agree with Rauner that I think some things need to be passed as far as like term limits. And I think there needs to be salary caps for the House and the Senate as well.
I was nervous that they weren't going to be able to override the veto, but I'm glad that they all did the right thing and did what had to be done. If we had gone into year three with no budget, I think that there would have been disastrous consequences. So I'm glad that they were finally able to all be adults and get it done when it needed to get done.
Those are residents of Champaign-Urbana, Chris Jupp, Stephanie Hall, two others who declined to give their names because they were state workers, speaking with producer Christine Herman last night about yesterday's budget vote. As I said, all of you have been tweeting since yesterday evening to us about how you feel about it. Mark from Springfield says he feels great. As a state employee, I will have the resources necessary to perform my job duties. Jason says, hey, Rauner is the good guy here. If you like taxes, tax the pensions, or better yet, true pension reform. Moody says this tax is not a fix. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Coming up, we're going to be speaking with a couple lawmakers, including Representative Wallace from Rockford. Later in the hour, we're going to be speaking with former Governor Jim Edgar to hear from him about where he thinks we go from here. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This is The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, preparing students and scholars for their fields by offering access to today's cutting-edge equipment and technology within advanced library environments and facilities. The University Library at Illinois.
When you're listening to The 21st, thanks for tuning in. It only took 736 days for Illinois to get a budget. We have one as of yesterday. There's a state budget that includes a $36 billion spending bill, a nearly $5 billion tax hike, both for individuals and corporations. Today, we're getting reaction from lawmakers past and present on both sides of the aisle. We're talking to school superintendents, hospitals, the Chamber of Commerce, and you. We're getting your reaction to how you feel about it. Amy from Central Illinois says, I'm deeply relieved to have a budget that trims spending dramatically and raises revenue to pay debt and invest in Illinois. Disaster averted. This budget package included big spending cuts along with the tax increase. Stop pretending the Illinois GOP didn't get anything out of the negotiation. You can continue to tweet to us as well. Our handle's 21STShow. Joining us now is Representative Letisa Wallace. She's a Democrat from Rockford. Representative Wallace, welcome to the 21st. Welcome back, I should say.
Well, thank you for having me.
I was speaking with you yesterday when you were waiting inside the chamber as the hazmat situation was going on. Did all of that feel a little surreal to you to be kind of in a shelter in place inside the house?
Yes. It's never happened that way before. I've been in active shooter situations in other work environments, but this one was pretty surreal. It was almost unbelievable that it was happening right at that moment.
Well, and you yourself were the subject of vicious online attacks because you voted for this budget. I know last week during the vote, you were a little emotional that there was finally movement on the budget. How are you feeling about how this process to get a budget happened?
Well, so this is the first budget, full budget that's been in place since I got into office.
Right. You've been in office for 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just close to three. And so we were operating under the FY15 budget when I came in, which is the last full budget the state had. So I was very emotional when we began to actually vote in a bipartisan manner for spending plans. It was necessary and needed, but it has been a very difficult time because so many people have decided to kind of sensationalize what was done rather than focus on the fact that we finally have a balanced budget for the state.
As you said, you came into office 2 years ago. I wonder, as you've seen some of your colleagues who have been doing this for decades say that they're so fed up that they're either not going to, they're not going to run again for office or they're just quitting outright. How do you feel about being a lawmaker right now? This was a really nasty fight. You have gotten some pretty awful things said to you just because of how you voted.
Right. It has been nasty. I do feel pretty sad about the individuals who have operated within this body and knew a more peaceful time than the time that I've experienced. So I do feel quite a bit of a remorse that those individuals are deciding to leave. Having nothing else to compare it to in terms of my own personal experience, it just makes me want to fight that much harder for the most vulnerable citizens of the state. And to do what's best for all citizens of the state.
Do you feel like that happened yesterday?
I do. We were facing a number of issues, including the very real prospect of our schools not opening this fall. We've lost a number of domestic violence shelters throughout the state. In some parts of the state, there are animal shelters, but no domestic violence shelters, just to kind of put that into perspective for you. And we had close to 25,000, or if not actually more than 25,000 jobs at risk for the road construction project. So everyone would like to drive over a bridge that's safe. We want to drive over our highways and be safe, but individuals were facing losing their jobs, the ones who helped to provide those services to us. So I think it was the best for everyone.
You said that K-12 funding is obviously something that is important to you. That's something that still has yet to be decided. We were just talking right. to a school superintendent east of St. Louis, far down in the southern, well, the southwestern part of the state about that. What's sort of the thinking in the House right now about SB1? I know that's that's waiting the governor's signature.
Right. So the education appropriation piece that was part of all that we passed is actually based upon the new funding formula that provides equity for students who live in poverty, and those students are all across the state. And it doesn't take anything from districts that are able to provide a little bit of more support and funding for their particular schools, but it does make sure that we bring the spending up to an adequate and equitable level for low-income students and for students with special needs.
So we'll see what happens with that. That's Representative Lidney. That's not very much vacation time for you, I would imagine, as everyone's thinking about what's going to happen with school funding. Representative Letisa Wallace represents Rockford. It's a 67th district. Representative, thanks for taking the time to be with me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
You know, business groups have voiced opposition to both the tax increase and the way lawmakers overrode Governor Rauner's vetoes. They've been big supporters of his agenda to remake workers' comp, to limit the power of labor unions, among other things. Todd Meisch is the president and CEO of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, and he's on the line with us now. Hi, Todd. Welcome back to 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Todd, what was your reaction to yesterday's vote, to the fact that we have a budget, but it came at the cost of overriding Governor Rauner's vetoes?
I think there's a lot of disappointment in the business community, especially to have something go for so long and then end up with really a budget that's very problematic, but more importantly, no real fundamental changes to the economy of the state of Illinois. So there's no workers' compensation reform. There's no property tax relief. We thought there were opportunities to help spur small businesses, to help make up for the fact that tax rates were going to go up. None of that was addressed, and that is creating an awful lot of disappointment.
What do you think the tax hike means for businesses in Illinois? Because it wasn't just a personal one. There was a corporate tax hike as well.
Yeah, I'd say overall it's a net negative for employers, but at the same time, once you get below that first level, it really is uneven. If you are a manufacturer here in the state of Illinois, and you're going to have those higher rates, and you're competing against manufacturers in other states that have a lower cost structure, you know, it's just bad news. But you know, the hospitals in the state of Illinois and in many communities are the single largest employer, so they are probably very happy to see the budget resolved because now they can actually get paid by the state for Medicaid and other services. So it's very unbalanced, but we believe strongly at the Chamber, representing the diversity of the business community, that it's a net negative for the economy and then for employers as well.
We are going to be speaking to hospitals and the Illinois Hospitals Association in just a minute, Todd. But let me ask you, because one thing I think we hear over and over, certainly from business community, from business groups, we've heard this from the rating agencies, is that Illinois needs stability, that we need stability. Business owners need that to operate. They need to have predictability and to think about hiring. Do you think yesterday gives us that?
Certainly more than there was the day before. But there are still huge problems. I think you probably mentioned that Moody's has come out and said that even with the budget decision yesterday, that Illinois may still face a junk bond rating because the budget doesn't adequately address the backlog of unpaid bills, nor the ever-ballooning pension debt, which is now about $250 billion. So I think that by not having a comprehensive approach and a bipartisan approach, you really left by the side of the road the opportunity to deal with those two very large problems as well. Because I'll be honest, you're not going to deal with those in a meaningful way at a 4.95% income tax rate, to be honest, unless there's much more appetite for a lot more cutting. To address those two big issues probably mean dedicated revenue sources above and beyond 4.95%.
Mm-hmm. That's Todd Meisch, president and CEO of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, reacting to yesterday to the fact that we have a budget voice from one voice from the business community. Todd, thanks for being with us. Thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure. Enjoyed it.
We heard about Todd mentioning the Hospitals Association. Let's go now to hear some reaction from the Illinois Health and Hospitals Association. As Todd mentioned, Illinois hospitals are owed billions of dollars from the state of Illinois, not just for Medicaid reimbursement, but also insurance payments for state workers. Danny Chun is a spokesperson with the group. He's on the line now from Naperville. Danny, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Nyla, for having me back on the show.
What's the response from Illinois hospitals to the news that we finally have a state budget?
First of all, this was a very, very tough vote for 71 legislators in the House and 36 legislators in the Senate. This was very difficult, and we all acknowledge that. So we want to thank each of those legislators for taking those votes to finally resolve the state's budget impasse. I think yesterday was day 737 that the state was without a full state budget, unprecedented in American history. No state has ever gone this long without a budget. I mean, it's unheard of. So we're relieved. As everyone says, there's still a lot of work to be done. We agree with everyone else who acknowledges that. But the important first step of finally having a budget, I can't overemphasize how important a step that was for the General Assembly to take that action.
Right. And what do you think, where are you kind of hoping, what do Illinois hospitals hope to see happen in the coming months?
Well, as you had Comptroller Mendoza on the show earlier, she has a very, very huge task. And we will be working with her on making sure that health care is a priority in terms of the payments flowing to all health care providers, not just hospitals. But we realize that's going to take time. Yes, a budget is passed, but it's not like a light switch where everything will just, you know, automatically be okay. This is going to take time. But again, want to commend the legislature for taking that critical step during the 4th of July holiday weekend and yesterday in the House.
Thanks to Danny Chun for joining us, a spokesperson for the Illinois Health and Hospitals Association, giving us a perspective from hospitals. Certainly, this money that they're owed is crucial to many of these hospitals continuing to function. Danny, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
You know, as we talk about this, 10 Republicans voted to override Governor Rauner's veto yesterday. One of them is Representative Reggie Phillips from Illinois' 110th district that includes Charleston and Eastern Illinois University, and he's on the line now. Representative Phillips, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
You bet.
You know, I saw your speech on the House floor before the vote yesterday, and you said you felt tortured by your vote, by your decision. What made this such a tough thing for you?
Well, I ran on being a conservative Republican, fiscally responsible, so I mean, that should say it all. Yesterday was certainly not fiscally responsible for the state of Illinois. We're raising people's taxes up to 4.95%, but, you know, that's not the elephant in the room, 4.95, because it was 5% under the Quinn administration in 2011 that had bipartisan support back then. Why weren't everybody screaming and hollering about that in 2011? I think the reason why people are hollering now is because after 4 years of that and the $35 billion spent under that plan, under that administration, under that particular budget, the money didn't go to exactly where it was supposed to go. Now, I wasn't privileged or party to that, but this particular budget has outlines in Senate Bill 6 exactly where it's supposed to go and what it's supposed to do. So my due diligence for the next year and a half is to make doggone sure what we've raised is going to go to those bills and continue to do what I can at the best of my ability to see if we can't get some of the governor's turnaround agenda over the next year and a half. So that's the reason why I said what I said.
Yeah. Now, Representative, your district includes Eastern Illinois University. Certainly, we've seen at least a couple hundred folks laid off there because of the state budget impasse. How much did Eastern factor into your decision? Certainly when we think about it being an economic engine generator for the Charleston area, that's key. How much was that part of your decision to vote against the governor?
I don't know that it's a percentage. I have two community colleges. I got a prison. I've got a couple of towns that are owed several hundred thousand dollars for water, sewer, and so there's multiple. I have K-12 through my district. So here's how I waited. I looked at the governor's proposal. I've been waiting for 2.5 years. I was in the last meeting that was going to give just like a little stopgap funding to the higher education, and the governor's office pulled us aside into the leader's office and said, please give. I'd rather you not vote for this at this time, because it was actually going to be funded through the education assistance fund. It was given a little bit of money. It wasn't a lot. And I thought, well, it's a handout. And so we were asked not to vote for that because they were really close with negotiating with the other side. As you understand, I'm not party to any of the negotiations. I sit in my seat and I wait until they actually negotiate, the governor, the governor's people, and Leader Durkin's people. Most of them have been in their politicians for multiple years. And my opinion was never asked. I've never been part of the actual negotiation. So it comes down to the last couple of days. I have to look at the governor's budget plan, 4.95% increase on the taxpayers, $37.2 billion, I think, or $3 billion income tax, or the revenue that would be, and then spending very similar. 10% cut to universities, the bill that I voted on, 10% cut to universities. The bill I voted on had $1,000 extra reduction for senior citizens on their property tax bill. A lot of similarities to both of the bills. There was only one particular difference in the two bills. The governor's had some of his turnaround agenda. For example, he had the term limits. He had term limits for leaders. All right, who's the leaders? Mike Madigan. So he had that set for 10 years, and then constitutional officers at 8 years. Am I a proponent for that? You absolutely bet I'm a proponent for that.
Representative Phillips, can I stop you for a second here because we've got to take a break, but yeah. Can you stick around because I want you to be able to finish that thought and want to ask you one other question as well, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Great. Stay tuned to the 21st. We're going to pick up this conversation on the other side of this with Representative Reggie Phillips from Illinois' 110th District. You're listening to the 21st.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
I'm Nyla Boodoo, and this is the 21st. Illinois finally has a state budget. We've been asking you your reaction. Nancy from Springfield says to us on Twitter, it's not perfect, but it's a start. I'm glad to see a budget, and those who reached across the aisle now keep it going. 10 Republicans voted to override Governor Rauner's veto. One of them is on the line with us. We've been speaking with Representative Reggie Phillips from Illinois' 110th District, which includes Charleston and Eastern Illinois University. Representative Phillips, you were saying that you still support Governor Rauner's turnaround agenda, including term limits and those sorts of things. I imagine what hope do you have that those things will be accomplished in this legislature now?
Well, back to the term limits, you know, what we were asking for was, first of all, we wanted term limits on all legislators, or we wanted fair mapping. These are two of the things that the governor ran on. This 85% of the state of Illinois supports that. And in order to get that, you have to get that on to the voters for them to vote for it. And then you have to get that constitutionally adjusted. So you have to first get it out of the Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee is controlled by the Speaker of the House, which is Michael Madigan. But let's move on from there. So that was one of the things he wanted. So we dropped it down to just, how about in the Senate, they were working on just leadership term limits. Okay, and they set it at 10 years. Okay, so fast forward 10 years, Michael Madigan would still be in control of the House. So I guess it's better than nothing, but, you know, that's where we were at with term limits. Then we were talking about workers' compensation reform, which was a big issue up and down the state. Almost everybody could agree that that is a huge issue for everybody, for the governments, for city governments, for us. And so it was, what we got is, you know, we were given just the crumbs off of the table because we were never going to get causation, which is the factor that really reduces workers' comp and lowering the fees for medical providers, which is your hospitals, your doctors, and all those who provide it. So that was a really uphill climb, and we'd been working and working and working on that. For me, that saved me hundreds of thousands of dollars for workers' compensation. And so then the last thing was the property tax freeze, which was everybody in the state, and it's the elephant in the room, okay? Not the 495, but the property taxes. Mine are very, very expensive. Mine are 2.5 times higher than what Madigan pays for his house in Chicago, and you go out in the suburbs, and everybody else has that. So it is probably one of the bigger issues, along with the pension issue, which is a big issue.
Right, and Representative Phillips, when we think about, all of those huge issues, the pension issue, all of these, the property tax issue, all of the things that were looming 2 years ago that we hadn't dealt with. I just want to ask you one last question. We just have about a minute or so left, but I wonder, especially as you mentioned Speaker Madigan, yesterday he thanked you. He said, today we stood together. This is what happens when people have the best interests of our state in mind and work in good faith. Do you feel like that exists? Do you feel like you can continue to do that as a Republican in the House?
Here's the way it looks. What I was trying to finish up was, we're looking at the two proposals. The one proposal on the right by the governor, I don't care if you win another 6 years, you weren't going to get what you wanted. So here we are looking at both 4.95, both, one's $37 billion, the other one's $36 billion. I decided to cross party lines because right now Eastern University weighs into it, my community colleges weighed into it. And another 6 months of negotiation, what would that get us? 20, 25 billion of unpaid bills, $1 billion worth of interest. I took a look at it from a business standpoint, the better part of dollars. Let's just go ahead and retreat right now. We'll have to come back later and try to work on those other deals. But to continue to go with an impasse for 2.5 years and another 6 months, 8 months, thinking you're going to get these three reforms that I just talked about, you've got a better chance of raising the Titanic fully intact with all the people that died on there eating crumpets. Under this particular, you know, it's one thing to talk about, okay, well, we take in $32 billion, and McCarter's plan says we can actually live with that $32 billion. Yeah? Ask him if he's ever got it out of the Rules Committee. Ask him if he ever really thinks he's going to get that on the Rules Committee and get it to the House or even the Senate. It's one thing. It's like the Illinois policy. They're beating us all up about this because they think we can live within $32 billion. Oh, yeah, we sure can. We could probably live within $28 billion. But under the particular leadership and the presentation that's in the House and the Senate now, do you really think you're going to get them to vote on that?
Yeah, like so said, Representative Phillips, it's, yeah.
So right. It's really disingenuous to offer something that you know good and well is just political theater. And that's all it is. And I got tired of the political theater. That's all we had. So to continue to put our state in more harm's way right now, it's not the best thing to do. Here's what I always thought.
He well, thanks, no Representative Phillips. I'm afraid.
Can I finish?
He's no fool
who gives away what he does not own in order to get what he can't afford to lose. There, keep that one in mind. Thanks
for joining us, Representative Phillips. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
As we've heard, Representative Phillips gives us a sense of some of the frustration, not just constituents, but obviously lawmakers are facing in the House. We wanted to end with former Republican Governor Jim Edgar. He, of course, has a unique perspective on this as a legislative staffer, Secretary of State and state representative before he served as Illinois' Republican governor from 1991 to 1999. He's on the phone with us now. Governor, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
As you heard, Representative Phillips,
it's been quite a week in Illinois.
It really has been quite a week.
It's really been a good week. It's really been a good week. I know there's a lot of people unhappy anytime you deal with taxes, but I think the General Assembly really arose to the occasion. And I have to say I didn't expect it. I thought we were going to continue to, you know, be in this mess that we've been in the last 2 years, but I give the General Assembly, and particularly those 11 Republicans, 10 in the House and one in the Senate, who showed a lot of courage and really saved this state from the mess that we had found ourselves in.
Right. And you just, I don't know if you just heard Representative Phillips saying he thought there was a greater chance of the Titanic being raised than any of Governor Rauner's turnaround agenda getting through that he had attached to the budget. I want to ask you where we go from here. And telling you what Democratic Comptroller Susana Mendoza said at the top of the hour of the show. She said that essentially if Governor Rauner doesn't want to work with everybody, that's fine. We're all going to just work together and essentially bypass him. Is that where we're at right now? Where do we?
I hope not. I hope the governor will realize that, you know, I've been disappointed with his approach on the budget. I think it was wrong. The strategy was wrong. I mean, you're dealing in a democracy when you've got people of different points of view, different parties. You've got to try to figure out finding common ground. And while I think we saw that in the General Assembly this last week, I mean, I think they kind of arose above the partisanship, particularly the Republicans, but also the Democrats. I mean, I think from a political point of view, they could have fallen short and, you know, the governor was going to get blamed a lot more than he already is. And so politically, they probably would have some way maybe been better off. But governmentally, they did the right thing. And particularly those 11 Republicans did the right thing. And I just hope that Governor Rauner kind of, all right, he made his try. I mean, he can now have his cake and eat it too. I mean, the budget is intact. The state's not going to, you know, fall off the cliff, and he can say that he didn't support a tax increase. But it's really important how you implement the budget. I've said many times, you pass legislation, that's important, but implementation is almost as important. And particularly with a budget like this, in the situation we're still in, I mean, we didn't fall off the cliff, but we're still hanging. I mean, we're not going to go back and everything's rosy now. These are going to be very tough times, and it's going to take leadership from the governor's office to deal with the budgetary problems. We've got to get away from the partisan politics and really, as the General Assembly, I think, demonstrated this week, do what's best for the state, not necessarily what's best politically for them.
Governor, when you say we have to get away from partisan politics, I can't help but think of what happened not just yesterday in the State House with the hazmat situation. We don't know the motivation of the woman who was dropping this powdery substance, which turned out to not be an actual biological threat. But I'm thinking of the threats that both Republicans and Democrats have gotten, the horrible things said to them online. I'm thinking of Representative Anderson, even someone saying, I'm coming for you. The state police having to put out things saying this is how you protect yourself as a lawmaker. As a former governor of this state, and as we think about the national political climate that we're in, what advice do you have for everyone going forward, not just for lawmakers, but for us citizens to try to this is a pretty awful environment?
Well, I think everyone in any kind of position of so-called leadership or position of power needs to be extremely careful in what they say. And I mean, I've said for years now, one of our problems is we've lost civility. We can disagree, but we need to disagree in an agreeable manner. And I think particularly people in leadership positions, they'd be extremely careful in how they phrase their thoughts to the public and the media, you know. But we've got so many groups out there, and there's so much money floating around funding a lot of these groups now that are, you know, going to make it extremely difficult for people who do their job not to take a lot of abuse, and that's unfortunate. And that's why my hat's off to these members of the General Assembly who are willing to take that on, particularly these Republicans, because they're the ones really probably facing the biggest political risk in the future because of primaries and some of these groups that are going to come after them with money and all kinds of charges and things. And it's, again, I hope the people of the state appreciate the courage these 11 people showed. And again, I just think everyone has to be a little careful in their rhetoric. And I don't think anyone should think that, you know, for over 2 years now, we've been spending way beyond what our revenues are. Even though we didn't have a budget, we were still spending much more than we were taking in. And we've got to pay for that irresponsibility. And that is what has happened. I mean, the General Assembly recognized they needed to deal with that, and they did. And so I just hope people would kind of step back and realize we were in a crisis, and these people stepped forward and really saved the state.
And I wonder at what cost, when you think about people like Christine Rodonio saying that she's retiring, representatives, not just Republican, Democrats as well, Elaine Neckritz saying she's going to...
Some of the best legislators, yeah.
Yeah.
You also have Representative Hayes. I mean, there's a
Hayes
lot
who
of
said he
people.
Would not... Right. Do you right. worry
I
that
mean,
this
there
is...
There are a lot of really good people. And I think, again, it hasn't been an easy job to be... in particularly the legislature the last 2 years, particularly for the rank and file. And, you know, I think they've taken, and they're taking a lot of abuse now, but I think they, when the chips were down, they stood up here in the last.
Yeah, that said, Governor, what advice do you have for the rank and file lawmakers moving forward now?
Well, I think, you know, I ran for governor saying I wanted to make a temporary tax permanent. That wasn't real popular, but, you know, if you explain yourself, and most people out there are pretty reasonable. I mean, nobody likes to pay taxes. I mean, I remember some of the people in the party that didn't like my position, said, well, we polled and people don't like this tax. And I said, people never like a tax. I mean, that's just human nature. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And you can't spend money you don't have. And there are basic needs that we need to meet for people in need and for our schools and for our transportation. I mean, there were, what, laying off 20,000 construction workers this last week because there wasn't a budget. I mean, those things have to be, I think, taken in consideration. And, you know, it's, this tax, we're going back to where we were 2 years ago. In fact, I don't think we're quite there. We're a little bit under it. I've talked to a lot of legislators after that tax went off, and nobody said they ever got a call from anybody thanking them when that went down. So, again, I think people have to understand we have to pay for services that people need and want. And, you know, you need to have a budget that's balanced. And while this isn't a perfect budget, this isn't a perfect solution, it's a vast improvement over where we would have been today if they hadn't acted in the legislature this last week and taken it upon themselves. Usually this comes from the governor. This is what's unusual about this. This is the legislature really stepping in and solving this problem. And that's very unusual, at least in Illinois. I don't know when it's ever happened before.
That's former Governor Jim Edgar giving us his thoughts on everything. Good point as to where we would be today if we didn't have a budget. Governor Edgar, thanks for being with us. So we always appreciate having you on the 21st.
Uh-huh.
You know, as today we've been getting reaction from listeners and lawmakers, people most affected by the budget crisis. On Monday, we're going to take a look at what it will take to rebuild Illinois after having gone without a budget for more than 2 years. That's all the time we have for today. You can always head to 21stshow.org to figure out how to communicate with us, where to follow us on Twitter, to comment on our Facebook page. Thanks for everyone who commented and tweeted at and Facebook commented on how they felt about the budget. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, broadcasting today from the Medill School of Journalism in downtown Chicago. Thanks for listening.